So I had a dream a few nights ago that we were having class in the Buddha Hall. Yeah. And we were doing pujas in the Buddha Hall, and all these people came, and we had a big consecration in the Buddha Hall. But we're still in the dining room, aren't we? Yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there. Okay. So we're on chapter 8, okay, in Following in the Buddha's Footsteps. Wow, look at that. We're getting somewhere. And we've been talking, you know, first we talked about refuge, and then in terms of the Dharma refuge, the topic of the three higher trainings came up. Those are common to all the Buddhist traditions. We've talked about sila, ethical conduct already, and we're in the middle of the higher training in concentration. Okay, and we've done quite a bit in that chapter already, or in that section. There's still more to go. Talking about the object of meditation, the kind of situation that you need to be in to generate serenity. And then we talked about the five hindrances that are discussed in all the Buddhist traditions, and then the five faults with the eight antidotes that come from Maitreya's text. And then we talked about the six powers and the three attentions and the nine sustained attentions that culminated in realizing serenity. Okay? So now we're at the very beginning of chapter 8, and this is entitled The Meditative Absorptions. Because once you've attained serenity, like I've said, serenity is a skill that both Buddhists and non-Buddhists have, and we generate it. So, well, as it talks about, there's two ways that it's used. One way is to, if someone aspires to be born in the form of formless realms, then this is how they do it. The other way is if somebody wants to, really use their concentration to stabilize their renunciation, stabilize their bodhicitta, to realize selflessness and emptiness, then it comes in that context as well. Okay? So here we go. So this chapter is probably more detailed than you've heard before, and there are some terms that sound similar. So you really have to think about it and go over it several times to understand it. Okay? So, serenity is a tool to aid our practice. It is not an end in itself. So this is, what? Oh, yeah, we got to do the prayers, huh? I forgot. I'm just so eager to teach this. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, because if you do the prayers beforehand, you're creating merit and purifying, and so then the teachings go in a different way. Thank you for reminding me and tempering my enthusiasm. Okay. So let's visualize the merit field, the space in front, and ourselves surrounded by all sentient beings that who we are going to lead in taking refuge and generating bodhicitta. Let's generate our motivation. So serenity is an important tool, an important skill that as Buddhist practitioners we want to cultivate, because it will enhance our ability to do other meditations And especially, you know, when we have come to the conclusion of a meditation or generated a certain quality, to hold the mind on that understanding, on that quality, so that it becomes integrated with our own mind. Since it's a tool and a skill, our motivation of how we use it is incredibly important. Because alone, it's not virtuous or non-virtuous. So let's make sure we have a virtuous intention in learning about serenity, and also when we meditate to try to attain it. And so here we want our motivation to be very broad, very vast. Yeah. And so thinking about renunciation, freeing ourselves from samsara, and then expanding that to want to free all living beings from samsara. Why? Because we care about them. They're just like us, wanting happiness and not suffering. And in our previous lives, they've been kind to us. In our present life, they're kind. In our future lives, they will also be kind. So with the aspiration to attain full Buddhahood, to benefit them most effectively, then we'll listen to the teachings on serenity today. Okay, so let's try this again. Serenity is a tool to aid our practice. It is not an end to itself. Yeah? Why is it an end to itself? Because serenity itself will not lead us to either liberation or full awakening. Yeah? It's a tool that we use to progress on the path to attain liberation and awakening. The purpose, okay, for us Buddhists, the purpose of gaining serenity is to be able to cultivate insight and then to unite serenity and insight, which empowers the mind to be able to either temporarily suppress or completely eliminate afflictions. Okay, that's why we want to develop it. So there's two kind of things that we can do with it. Temporarily suppress the afflictions so that they aren't plaguing us, or completely eliminate them. Yeah, temporarily suppress them is like eating a good meal. It solves your hunger, but it doesn't solve your problem of ever getting hungry again. Yeah, so we in particular want to use it to attain liberation and awakening. Yeah. In the process of doing that, we have to actualize. If you want to become a Buddha, you have to actualize all the different meditative absorptions, you know. To attain liberation, you don't have to actualize all the absorptions. Yeah. But okay, so having attained serenity, a practitioner may follow one of two paths, okay? One is the mundane path leading to the attainment of higher meditative absorptions in this life, birth in the form or formless realms in the next life, and perhaps the first five superknowledges, okay? So mundane, it means that the result of this serenity is going to be experienced while we're in samsara. Okay, it's not leading to awakening. So what are the things we can experience? Okay, the higher meditative absorptions in this life. In other words, being able to generate the four formless realm absorptions and the four form realm absorptions and the four formless realm absorptions, and just let the mind be in them and enjoy the bliss and the equanimity and like that. That's one mundane goal. Second mundane goal is if you keep doing that, okay, and you have that level of concentration when you die, then you will be born in the form or form realm that is equivalent to the level of concentration that you generated in this life. Okay? And then also there's six super knowledges, but so the first five can be generated just with serenity in using it in a mundane way. Okay, we'll get into the super knowledges later. Yeah. Okay, so that's the mundane path, involves mundane insight, which contemplates the drawbacks of or the grossness of the lower states of meditative absorption and the benefits or the peacefulness of the higher states within cyclic existence. Okay, that's what you're meditating on, and it results in temporarily suppressing the afflictions. Okay, so when you actualize those former form lumps, you know, states, then, you know, your anger, your desire, your jealousy, all those things are suppressed, you know, to different degrees according to the level of concentration you've attained. Okay, that's all within cyclic existence. That all results in a rebirth in the form of formless realms. Okay, remember when we were studying the 12 links of dependent arising, and the link of karma, now the second link, they talked about virtuous, non-virtuous, and then unfluctuating. Yeah. So this is the unfluctuating karma when you attain a form of formless absorptions. Yeah. That becomes the unfluctuating karma. It's unfluctuating because if you attain, let's say, the second form realm absorption, you will be born into the second form realm absorptions. It won't be the third, it won't be a formless absorption. Okay, so it doesn't fluctuate according to the result and the state you actualized in this life, you know, are similar. They don't fluctuate. Okay, whereas let's say virtuous karma, let's say you have the karma to be born as a human being, that could fluctuate depending on other karma that ripens. Maybe you're born in one country or another country or to these parents or that parents, in a poor family, in a rich family. You know, that kind of karma fluctuates. Okay. So this path of mundane concentration is common to both Buddhists and non-Buddhists. Yeah. So remember, you know, after the Buddha attained awakening, he went and he studied with two teachers before he sat under the Bodhi tree. So both of these teachers, they had actualized these mundane concentrations. The first one had actualized, I think it was the fourth form realm, and the second one, you know, is something in the formless realm. Yeah, but remember when they had actualized that, but then they said to the Buddha, you did the same, you have the same realizations I do, why don't you take over the group? And the Buddha said, no, I still haven't attained awakening. Yeah, And so he left both of those teachers, and that's when he went to... after that, he did the 6 years of ascetic practices, and those didn't get him to awakening either. So he crossed the river and sat under the Bodhi tree. Okay, so then the other route you can go once you actualize a serenity is the supramundane path, in which serenity is used as the basis for cultivation of insight into the 16 attributes of the four truths, and especially selflessness and emptiness. Okay, this is unique to Buddhist practitioners and leads to nirvana and full awakening. Serenity is required to proceed on either the mundane path or the supramundane path. Okay? You're with me so far. Just you wait. Gets more complicated. Understanding the meditative absorptions will benefit your practice. You will know that the practice of cultivating serenity and the higher meditative states requires patience, fortitude, and effort. Okay? In other words, it's not quick, cheap, and easy. And I just keep thinking of that young man who came here one summer, who wanted the bliss, and he wanted it quick, and I couldn't give it to him, so I referred him to Bhante Gunaratana in West Virginia, and I don't know what happened to him. Yeah, I wish him good luck. But it requires fortitude, patience, and effort. And it's best to approach this without expectation of quick results gained with little effort. Oh, but quick results with little effort is what we want. Yeah? Why can't we have it? I'm going to stamp my feet and complain to the Buddha. He made the path so hard, so long. Can't he make it easier, quicker? Please, if you're dissatisfied with the path, go complain to the Buddha. I can't do anything for you. I don't think the Buddha can either, because you have to remember the Buddha did not create the path. He merely described it. Yeah. Okay, so these teachings provide a roadmap to follow that enables us to practice in a steady, sequential manner and to more accurately evaluate our practice and experiences in meditation. Yeah, so that's very helpful. We can have all sorts of experiences in meditation. Yeah, and some of them are reliable and some of them are, Okay, so this prevents us, having this roadmap prevents us from becoming arrogant or giddy with excitement after having an especially good session or an unusual experience. Yeah, but we want good meditation sessions, don't we? Yeah, and we want, unusual experiences, ones that we can talk to our friends about, Yeah, Chenrezig appearing, the Buddha appearing, feeling like we are one with space, one with the universe. Well, let's have, we want something jazzy. Yeah, quick. We don't want to work at it. Okay. But this gives us a roadmap so we can see, where we're going and how we're doing. So in this way, we will continue to practice with a balanced mind and a good motivation. Those two are very important. Balanced mind. Yeah, anybody here have a balanced mind? Yeah, we're kind of yo-yo, aren't we? Oh, some of you agree, and some of you are looking at me like, what are you talking about? I'm totally balanced. See? The same. Okay. So we need a balanced mind and a good motivation. The teachings in this chapter and the next chapter are complex and require study on our part to learn. There are several new terms which, with study, you will become familiar with. Okay, you may find it helpful to make an outline of the topics and to see how different things correlate. Okay, there's a few charts in here that, you know, might be able to help. Okay, so next section, cultivating mundane insight. Okay, so this is the mundane insight that's common to Buddhists and non-Buddhists. Yeah. So samsara consists of three realms, the desire realm, form realm, and formless realms. Okay. If you go back to, is it volume 2 or volume 3 where we, which one?
Realms.
Yeah, with all, volume 3 with all the different realms. Yeah. So you can go back and look at that for, if you want to. Okay, the desire realm is so called because the beings in it are distracted to external objects of desire. True or not true? Are you distracted to external objects of desire? Our whole life revolves around them, doesn't it? We are so externally oriented. Yeah. The form realm, where beings have a subtler body than ours, consists of four levels of dhyana, meditative stabilizations. The Pali term is jhana. Yeah. While the formless realms, where beings do not have a coarse body, has four levels of meditative absorption. Okay. So four dhyanas and four meditative absorptions, depending on the realm. We live in the desire realm and know it exists. How can we establish the existence of the form and formless realms? One way is to examine the states of our mind. Our mental state in the desire realm is much grosser due to our distraction and obsession with external objects and their perception by the five sense faculties, eye, ear, nose, tongue, and touch. Okay? Yeah, we're totally involved with our, you know, involved with our senses, you know, not just with the objects to possessing objects, but different things we perceive also can establish our status in society, the respect other people have of us, whether we, you know, receive praise or criticism. All these kinds of things are dependent on external objects, aren't they? You know, you don't have a good or bad reputation without other people. Yeah, your reputation doesn't exist in emptiness, you know. It's because there's a certain group of people who have a certain, characteristics that you have to attain. And then if you attain those, then they give you a certain title and think of you in a certain way. Okay. And that can exist, but we have to perceive it with our senses, yeah? When we develop even a little concentration, our mind becomes more peaceful and stable. When this is enhanced, serenity is attained, and the mind becomes even calmer and subtler. From this, we can intuit that there are progressively deeper states of meditative absorption that are even more peaceful and subtle. And we can infer that there are sentient beings who take rebirth in these deep meditative absorptions and dwell in them for a long time. Okay, so the question was, how can we know that the form and formless realms exist? Looking at our own mind, Yeah, seeing how it gets calmer as we get more concentrated, and then infer that there must be deeper states of calm because there's deeper states of concentration. Okay? And there must be beings who take rebirth in those kind of states. Corresponding to the three realms, okay, the three realms are dhatu, or loka, okay, are the three spheres, or of a chara, okay. So we have the three realms and the three spheres of consciousness. They're not exactly the same. Okay, so the three spheres. One is the desire sphere of consciousness. Two, the form sphere of consciousness. And three, the formless sphere of consciousness. It sounds just like the three realms. So far, so good. Wait. Okay. These spheres of consciousness are a classification of mental states. Okay, the desire, form, and formless mental states, yeah? While the realms are planes of existence or worlds into which sentient beings are born. Okay, so we're in the desire realm right now. That's the world we're born into. At the moment, we also have desire realm minds. Okay, however, usually, beings in a particular realm have the sphere of consciousness corresponding to that realm. However, a being in another realm may have that sphere of consciousness on occasion. Okay. For example, human beings are born in the desire realm and have a desire sphere consciousness. Upon attaining serenity, a human being's meditating mind becomes a form sphere consciousness, although their body remains a desire realm consciousness. Okay? So your body's in the desire realm, but you've attained, as soon as you attain serenity, that is regarded as a form sphere consciousness. Yeah. When you're in meditation, your mind's in the form sphere. When you come out of meditation and you're, you know, paying your taxes and going shopping, that you're back into a desire realm sphere of consciousness. Okay? But in the meditation, you can go into the higher realm, the spheres. Okay. Each dhyana or jhana has two parts. The preparatory stages, also called access of that dhyana, okay, and two, the actual dhyana that is attained upon the completion of its preparatory stages. Okay, so there's four, we'll start with the form realm. Yeah, there's four dhyanas, first, second, third, fourth. That's easy to remember, yeah. Each one of them has two parts. The preparatory stages, that's what you need to practice in order to attain the second part, which is the actual dhyana, which is attained when you've completed the preparatory stages. Okay. To attain the actual first dhyana, meditators must first accomplish its seven preparatory stages, or preparations, which are the first dhyana spheres of consciousness. Okay, so you want to get to the first dhyana. Yeah, there's two parts to it, the actual dhyana, but you have to start with the preparatory stages, which are called access. Within that, the access, there are seven, okay, seven preparatory stages, or seven preparations. Yeah, they're all the first dhyana sphere of consciousness because that's what you're, you know, cultivating as you meditate. The seven preparations consist of the initial level of serenity, where one is called a mere beginner. Yeah, imagine that after you've gotten serenity and you're regarded as a mere beginner. Yeah, why? Okay, so you have the seven access parts. So the first one, mere beginner, that is serenity. And then the first six of the seven mental contemplations. Okay, so you have preparations, yeah, for each dhyana, and within the preparations, you have the mental contemplations. Okay. So here, serenity refers to a form sphere of consciousness and a level of meditative equipoise. Okay. So serenity must be strengthened by repeated meditation before meditators proceed to the seven mental contemplations. So when you're on that sphere, you've attained serenity for the six sustained attentions, okay? You need to get that stronger before you start engaging in the mental concentrations.
Well, you just said the six sustained attentions?
The six, what?
You just said the six, you attained serenity with the six sustained attentions. Were you talking about the nine?
Maybe I mispronounced something. Okay. So there's serenity, and then you need to strengthen that, and then you go through the seven preparatory stages, okay? Within the seven to the seven preparatory stages, there are seven mental contemplations, okay? This will become clearer. So the Shravaka grounds by, who wrote that text? Asanga, yep. Okay, the Shravaka grounds lays out the seven mental contemplations. And here's what he says. For the sake of freedom from the desire realm, diligent yogis use the seven types of mental contemplation and subsequently achieve their freedom. The seven types of mental contemplation are the mental contemplations of 1, discernment of characteristics, 2, arisen from belief, 3, the mental contemplation of isolation, 4, the mental contemplation of delight with or withdrawal, 5, the mental contemplation of analysis, 6, the mental contemplation of final training, and 7, okay, it's called a mental contemplation, but it's the final result of final training and is the actual first dhyana. Okay, so they say that there's 7 mental contemplations. Okay, the 7th one is the goal, okay, which is the first dhyana, yeah? Before those 7, yeah, is serenity, okay? So serenity doesn't count. It counts as one of the preparatory stages, but not as one of the mental contemplations. Okay. So these 7 mental contemplations can be practiced in terms of cultivating understanding of grossness and peacefulness or of the 4 truths. When we're doing mundane concentration, then it's in terms of grossness and peacefulness. When you want to attain, the liberation, then it's going to be the four truths. So difference in your object of meditation. When mental contemplations are practiced, So the first one, grossness and peacefulness, refers to the disadvantages of the lower sphere of consciousness and the relative peacefulness of the present one. Okay, so what happens is, okay, let's say you've actualized serenity. Yeah, you want to start going through the mental contemplations. You want to see the disadvantages, the grossness of just being in a desire realm, and the benefits, the advantages, the peacefulness of mind that arrives when you have the first jhana level of consciousness. Okay? So it's very much, the disadvantages of the lower state and the benefits of the higher. Yeah? Okay. So when mental contemplations are practiced for this aim, they are mundane paths practiced by Buddhists and non-Buddhists alike who want to deepen their meditative state. Okay. Both serenity and insight are employed. Yeah, even if you're doing it, for a mundane reason, you have to have both serenity and insight. They're different, though. Okay? Because here, when you want to reach the upper level of concentration, insight analyzes the grossness and peacefulness of the realms, and at the conclusion of analysis, serenity focuses one-pointedly on their relative grossness and peacefulness. Okay? So insight is more of an analytical mind. Concentration is more of a stabilizing mind. Yeah. So you need both. When let's say you want to go from desire realm to first realm, of a form, you need to say, oh, desire realm, there's so many things going on. It's so difficult to practice. You've got to do this. You've got to do that. And your mind is always full of afflictions. And, this is life in desire realm. But first, it's a lot more peaceful because I can just concentrate on one object, the mind settles down, my mind's not going ballistic over blah, 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 everything, okay? So you're meditating on these kinds of things and seeing that. And what that does is it boosts your effort so that as you strengthen the understanding of gracefulness and peacefulness, your mind will eventually attain the first jhana. Okay? Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then So we started the paragraph out with these seven mental contemplations can be practiced in terms of cultivating understanding of grossness or peacefulness, which we just did, or of the four truths. So here's how the four truths. So a sentence about that. So Buddhists practice the seven mental contemplations to cultivate understanding of the four truths in order to attain a supramundane path leading to nirvana. So supramundane all has to do with getting out of samsara. Yeah. First, we'll discuss the mental contemplations in terms of grossness and peacefulness as outlined in Asanga Sravaka grounds. Okay, so there's those seven mental contemplations. Okay, if you want to turn, those of you who have the book, to the next page, to 217, at the bottom you'll see the chart where you have the seven preparations and the seven mental contemplations of the first dhyana. Okay, so with the preparations, yeah, the first one is the mere beginner, which is serenity. Okay. But there's no mental contemplation equivalent to that. Yeah. It's just the beginner at mental contemplation, which is the initial level of serenity. Then when you go back to the left column, the second of the seven preparations, discernment of characteristics. Yeah, that's the second preparation, but it's the first mental contemplation of that realm. Okay? Then the third preparation, arisen from belief, is the second mental contemplation of the same title. Yeah. And so it goes, yeah, up to the seventh preparation, which is the sixth mental contemplation, final training. And the seventh mental contemplation is the result of final application, which is the first dhyana. But there's no specific preparation that's equivalent to that. Rather, it's just the last liberated path in the actual first dhyana. Okay? Yeah. So that chart, I think, is quite helpful. We're going to get into those terms of uninterrupted path and liberated path. Okay? So we've probably... I'll just bring them up now. They'll come up a little bit later. But we've seen those two terms before when we talk about salam, the grounds and paths of the stages of realizations going to nirvana, going to full awakening, okay? And in that context, yeah, the uninterrupted path is the meditative state of the union of serenity and insight, in which you are in the process of abandoning forever a certain level of afflictions, and the liberated path is when you are liberated from that affliction. So that's in the context of meditating on the four truths and going towards liberation and awakening. Yeah, you have the same terms when you're talking about somebody who is just trying to get to the next level of absorption, yeah? Because they have an uninterrupted path and a liberated path, but theirs are not eliminating the afflictions for good. Theirs are suppressing different levels of afflictions. Okay? So, yeah, the mundane one just suppresses it. It doesn't have the power to cut the afflictions from the root. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's go back. Here we're talking about the mundane path, and we already talked about the first preparation, which was serenity. Now we're at the first mental contemplation, which is the second preparation for the first dhyana. Yeah. It seems really complicated, but once you read it a few times, you know, kind of draw yourself a picture you'll remember. Okay, so the first mental contemplation of discernment of characteristics. So it involves study and reflection on the individual characteristics of the desire realm and the first dhyana, the former being gross and the latter peaceful. So you have to study about the three realms here, in particular the the desire realm and the form realm. So here meditators analyze the grossness of the desire realm. Okay, here's some of them. Sentient beings fight. Yeah. They create all 10 paths of non-virtue. Their bodies are made of foul substances, and their minds are filled with afflictions such as anger, resentment, jealousy, miserliness, and lack of integrity. Qualities, all these things are qualities that are absent in the first dhyana. Okay. They don't fight in the first dhyana. Okay. They manage to get along okay. They don't, their bodies are not foul. Their afflictions are not gross and, you know, fighting wars here and there and all, okay? So the beings born in the first dhyana experience suffering when they are born, age, fall, the desire realm, okay? Desire realm, they experience sufferings when they're born, age, fall ill, and die. And in between birth and death, they're dissatisfied, fearful, anxious, and despondent, and everything else. Okay, we know the desire realm, particularly the human realm, well. Okay, having analyzed the defects of the desire realm, meditators analyze the peacefulness of the first dhyana. Beings do not suffer from birth and aging. They have whatever they need, fulfill their desires without much effort, and experience contentment. No one engages in the 10 paths of non-virtue, so there are no wars over resources or honor. Yeah, the desire realm, boy, we fight over resources and we fight over honor. People kill each other over honor. Okay. First dhyana, they have long lifespans and don't experience the horrible diseases that beings in the desire realm face. Their environment is beautiful, embellished with spectacular buildings and jeweled grounds. Yeah, sounds great. Better than the Trump, the latest Trump whatever, in whatever country, resort. Yeah. Okay. So meditators focus single-pointedly first on the grossness of the desire realm, followed by the peacefulness of the first dhyana. Yeah, these two are their observed objects. Yes, you might have attained serenity meditating on the breath or, the nimitta, the figure of the Buddha, the nature of mind, whatever, okay? But when you're doing the mundane, concentrations here, then you're meditating on the grossness and peacefulness. Okay, so those are the observed objects. Yeah, that's why you have to analyze them before so you understand what to meditate on. Because it is difficult to analyze within the state of serenity, meditators alternate stabilizing and analytical meditation. Okay, so you see why, you're trying to get to the first dhyana. So stabilizing, or first you do the analytic meditation on gracefulness and peacefulness. Yeah, when you have a good understanding of those, then you focus on it with concentration. Yeah. Okay, so you do that. You alternate stabilizing and analytical meditation. And again, cultivate the 9 sustained attentions. Okay, remember those from last? Yeah. You cultivate the 9 sustained attentions, overcoming the 5 faults with the 8 antidotes and employing the 4 powers and 6 engagements. Okay. Should restlessness start to arise, yeah, they emphasize stabilizing meditation. Should laxity manifest, they emphasize analytic meditation. Okay, do you see why? Yeah, if your mind's with restlessness, you need to do the stabilizing meditation, keep it on one object. If your mind is going to laxity, yeah, then you need analytic meditation where you're going back and reflecting on the qualities of these different realms. That kind of wakes your mind up. Okay, continue. Now here we're still on the first mental contemplation. Okay, continuing to meditate, they gain mental and physical pliancy. The bliss of physical pliancy and the bliss of mental pliancy, which is a special mental pliancy induced by analysis. That's why it's special. Because usually, yeah, analysis, where you're analyzing and thinking about different things, usually that disturbs the stability of your concentration. Yeah? But here, when you attain pliancy, your analysis helps you to attain the pliancy. It doesn't interfere with attaining it. Okay, so this is a concentration that is a union of serenity and insight, and it is also the attainment of insight. So why they use the terms like this? If they ask, what is the attainment of insight? It's the union of serenity and insight. Okay. So the union of serenity and insight is so called because previously analysis interfered with the stability of serenity, and the stability of serenity interfered with analysis. Now there is no interference, and the stability at the end of analysis is a special kind of serenity. So this marks passing on to the second mental contemplation. Okay, so you're still, you know, in the preparations going to the first dhyana. But now you have serenity and you've accomplished the first mental contemplation of discernment of characteristics, which is so called because you're discerning the characteristics of the desire realm, and of the first dhyana. Okay, so now you're moving on to the second mental contemplation, the mental contemplation arisen from belief. So it is so called because it arises from the belief derived from learning and thinking about grossness and peacefulness during the first mental contemplation. Okay. So you really believe, you know, the desire realm is like this and the form realm is like that. Both serenity and insight are used during these mental contemplations. Insight is cultivated by analyzing the grossness and peacefulness. At the end of analysis, serenity focuses on the grossness and peacefulness discerned through analysis. Meditators now gain the ability to abandon some of the desire realm afflictions through suppressing them by the power of concentration. This abandonment is temporary, for the afflictions are only completely abandoned by the meditation uniting serenity and insight on emptiness. So, desire realm afflictions are of 9 grades. The 3 general grades are called great, middling, and small. Yeah. Each of those, in turn, is divided into great, middling, and small. So you have the great, great afflictions, the middling, great afflictions, the small, great afflictions. Yeah. Then you have the great, middling afflictions, the middling, middling afflictions, the small, middling. And then the great, small afflictions, the middling, small, and the small, small. Okay? The great, great are afflictions. You know, great here are the coarser ones. The smaller ones are more subtle. Okay? There's also a chart about that somewhere. I think it's on page 226, if I remember. Yes. Okay, if you look on page 226, grades of afflictions of the desire realm. And they're listed. Okay? So great, great, middle, great, small, great. Then great, middle, 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 small, middle. Then great, small, middle, small, and small, small. Okay? Okay. So the great, great afflictions are the coarsest ones and thus the easiest to abandon. Yeah? Because they're so coarse. It's like when you're really angry, you know? It's like you can tell you're angry. Everybody knows you're angry. That's what you have to do something about. Yeah? You may get, you know, kind of, when you're in a bad mood, suppress your anger. But inside, there's still anger. Yeah, so maybe you're kind of at the middling level. Then it gets more subtle. So something like that. Okay. So the great, great afflictions are the coarsest ones, and thus the easiest to abandon. The small, small are the most intractable and require more time and effort to abandon. Okay, so now the third mental contemplation of isolation. So the second one believes about, you know, the grossness of one and the peacefulness of the next. Okay, the mental contemplation of isolation arises from repeatedly cultivating the second mental contemplation, viewing the desire realm as gross and the first dhyana as peaceful with insight. When meditators can overpower the manifest form of the great, great root and auxiliary afflictions of the desire realm by the uninterrupted path that is their antidote, that marks the beginning of the third mental contemplation. Okay, lots of terms in here, but you'll get used to them. Yeah. So, manifest forms of afflictions are ones that are manifest in your mind at that time. Okay. You're angry, you're craving, you know, those are the manifest ones. The, the subtle ones, can be, don't have to be manifest, yeah. But here, the manifest forms of the great, great root and auxiliary afflictions, okay, of the desire realm, because there's afflictions of the desire realm, afflictions of the form realm, and afflictions of the formless realms, okay. What are you abandoning them with? The uninterrupted path, that is their antidote, because it is what overpowers them. Yeah, that marks the beginning of the third mental contemplation. In the same meditation session, you have the uninterrupted path suppressing the great, great afflictions of the desire realm. And in that same meditation session, when you have the uninterrupted path is in the process of suppressing it, when it passes, when you have oppressed it, you pass to the liberated path of those great, great afflictions of the desire realm. Okay? Okay. So it's called this uninterrupted path. It's called an uninterrupted path because it flows into the liberated path. Liberated path, you're liberated from whatever level of whatever you're abandoning. The uninterrupted path, you go directly from that into the liberated path in the same meditation session. Okay, so this uninterrupted path views the views the desire realm as gross. It is immediately followed by a liberated path that views the first dhyana as peaceful. The uninterrupted path is so called because it suppresses the manifest great, great afflictions of the desire realm so that these afflictions no longer cause any interruption. The liberated path is so called because it is liberated from those afflictions. Okay, now, as they're using the word liberated from those afflictions, are you really liberated? No. Okay. But it's liberation in the sense that the manifest ones are suppressed. Sometimes when they say for suppressing the manifest ones, they'll say they've been abandoned. I remember Geshe Yeshe, do you remember when he was teaching this some years ago? Was it him? Yeah, some of you here? Yeah. And it was very confusing because the Tibetan used the word abandon sometimes when it means suppress, like in here, and sometimes when it means cut from the root so it no longer appears. Okay, so it can be a little bit confusing. I'll try and use suppress and abandon as two different things, okay? Okay, the mental contemplation of isolation, which is the third one, it also has three uninterrupted paths and three liberated paths, one each for the great, great, middle, great, and small, great levels of afflictions. Okay, so your first one was for the manifest form of the great, great, great root and auxiliary afflictions, yeah. Yeah, so you have the great, great, middle, great, small, great levels of afflictions. An uninterrupted path without breaking in meditation becomes a liberated path with the suppression of each level of manifest, when each level of manifest afflictions is complete. This meditative contemplation of isolation is so called because it's the first time meditators' minds are completely separated or isolated from the great afflictions of the desire realm. Okay. In addition to the uninterrupted paths and the liberated paths, there is the mental contemplation of isolation that is neither. Okay, so one that's the liberated, uninterrupted path that is in the process of suppressing that whatever level of afflictions. It goes into the liberated path, which has succeeded in suppressing them. And then you have the same meditative contemplation that is neither uninterrupted or liberated, because, okay, here's the one level of afflictions. Interrupted path is eliminating it. Liberated path has liberated it, yeah? Now, you want to eliminate the next level of afflictions. You want to get to the uninterrupted of the small great afflictions, yeah? To do that, you have to keep practicing at the level where you had abandoned the great, great, and keep practicing, deepening your serenity. And when your serenity gets to the point where it has the force to overcome the middle grade afflictions, then you go into the uninterrupted path, yeah, for the middle grade afflictions. That goes into the liberated path of the middle grade afflictions. Okay, and you're going to be going into another level of the mental contemplations. And then the same thing happens, okay? So it's uninterrupted path, liberated path, and then you need that which is neither, so that you can build up the force in your meditation and your merit, yeah, to the point where you can get to the next uninterrupted path and its liberated path. Okay? Okay, so the mental contemplation of isolation that is neither. This is the meditation that occurs after one liberated path and before the next uninterrupted path that overcomes the next level of afflictions. Okay, for example, the uninterrupted path overcoming the great, great afflictions, yeah, is seamlessly followed by the liberated path that has overcome the great, great afflictions. Yeah, then the path that is neither occurs. Here, concentration is strengthened until it is strong enough to bring the uninterrupted path that overcomes the middle great afflictions, which will lead to the liberated path of the middle great afflictions. Okay? So the fourth mental contemplation is the mental contemplation of delight or withdrawal. And it also consists of three uninterrupted paths and three liberated paths. So these abandon the three levels of middling afflictions, great middling, middling, and small middling. Okay. Why middling, medium, middle, whatever. Okay, this mental contemplation is also called withdrawal because the uninterrupted paths view the desire realm, shed attachment to it, and withdraw from its grossness. Okay? It is called delight because the liberated paths viewing the first dhyana are free from the middling afflictions. As above, a mental contemplation of withdrawal or joy that is neither also exists. Okay. So you've abandoned the three levels of middling afflictions. Now, the fifth mental contemplation, the mental contemplation of analysis, is so called because having abandoned the first six levels of afflictions, meditators may think they have overcome all nine. We always tend to think we're more advanced than we really are. To discern if that is the case, they analyze by imagining an object that could easily give rise to a desire realm afflictions and see if even a small affliction arises in response. Okay, having detected that some desire realm afflictions can still manifest, they continue their meditation. Okay, now we're on to the sixth mental contemplation of final training. It also has three uninterrupted paths and three liberated paths that overcome the three small afflictions. Okay, so between, yeah, so there's a lot of liberated paths and uninterrupted paths and liberated paths in here. Okay, there's going to be nine of each, just, you know, in this in those seven preparations, okay? So between one liberated path and the next uninterrupted path, there is a mental contemplation, a final training that is neither. The last liberated path suppresses small, small desire realm afflictions. So the third, fourth, and sixth mental contemplations are the antidotes that suppress afflictions. Yeah? The third one of the great, the fourth mental contemplation of the middle, the third one of the great afflictions, all three levels, the second one of the fourth mental contemplation of all the levels of the middling afflictions. Okay, so and then the sixth mental contemplation are the antidotes, are the ones that suppress the small afflictions. Okay, then the seventh mental contemplation of the result of final training is free of manifest desire realm afflictions and occurs at the time of entering the first dhyana. So you've made it. Okay. Since afflictions have been suppressed but not destroyed and their seeds remain in the mind stream, one is not an Arya. You're still an ordinary being. Mm-hmm. So Jinaputra summarizes the seven mental contemplations in his commentary to Asanga's Compendium of Knowledge. So here's Jinaputra's synopsis. The mental contemplation of discernment of characteristics, brings about a comprehensive understanding of what is to be abandoned and what is to be attained, and then directs the mind towards their respective abandonment and attainment. Abandonment of the grossness of the desire realm and the peacefulness, and, you know, wanting to attain the peacefulness of the first dhyana. Following that, the mental contemplation arisen from belief, that's the second one, takes up the correct practice. The mental contemplation of isolation, the third one, abandons the great grades of afflictions. Okay. The mental contemplation of delight, that's the fourth one, abandons the middle grades of afflictions. The mental contemplation of analysis, the fifth one, places the mind in a state that is free of the exaggerated pride that believes the goal has been attained. The mental contemplation of final training, that's the sixth one, abandons the small grades of afflictions. And then the mental contemplation of the result of final training experiences the fruit of having meditated effectively on the preceding six mental contemplations. And it is the first dhyana, the actual first dhyana. In a manner that conforms to each specific instance, it should be understood that a description similar to the one that explains the seven mental contemplations that bring about the attainment of the first dhyana applies to all the other meditative levels up to the formless realms of neither discrimination nor non-discrimination. Okay? So these seven mental contemplations, yeah, you go through them each time to attain the first dhyana, the second dhyana, third dhyana, fourth dhyana, yeah? Then the first level of formless absorption, second level, third level, fourth level, okay? So you have to go through them again and again. And remember, each time when you're at a level where you're abandoning the afflictions, you have to go through the stages of sustained attention. Okay. So the seven preparations should not be confused with the seven mental contemplations. Yeah. The seven preparations consist of the initial level of serenity and the first six of the seven mental contemplations. The seven mental contemplations do not include the initial level of serenity and add the actual first dhyana as the last mental contemplation. And serenity as a quality of concentration is found in all the dhyanas and all the formless meditative absorptions. And then you have that chart below. Okay, are you sufficiently confused? Yes, okay. So I think we'll pause here, yeah?
So going back to the fifth mental contemplation, where the meditator might think that in fact they have overcome all nine, it seems like from the description that it would be obvious when you had gone from the uninterrupted path to the liberated path, and now you have to start working on the next one. Mm-hmm. So couldn't they just count and see that that has happened six times?
They don't do flow charts, you know. Yeah. Yeah, when they're in meditation, they're not doing flow charts, counting their levels. I think what just happens is your mind is much more peaceful than it was before. And since we have a tendency towards aggrandizing ourselves, yeah, we think, oh, I've gotten rid of all nine. Yeah, when we've actually just suppressed the first six levels. Mm-hmm.
So this is all happening before the path of seeing.
If you're meditating on, yes, basically, because to actualize the
union of serenity and insight, you need to go.
Are you talking?
Well, I'm just confused because when we do the paths and grounds, when you're a bodhisattva up in the path of meditation on the eighth ground, you're going through this and eliminating them once and for all, right?
Right.
So it's a you're suppressing them so that the mind gets stabilized and pliant enough to be able to meditate on them.
Yeah, well, we're suppressing them here because we're going through the way that you do it in the mundane way.
Okay.
Okay. But you also have to have that because you need the union of serenity and insight on emptiness to enter the path of preparation, which is before the path of seeing.
And then when the bodhisattvas, after the path of seeing, when they get to the higher grounds, they're going to start using this very pristine, subtle mind to start going through the innate afflictions at these different levels of the great of the great, the middle of the great, the small of the great?
Yeah, they're still on the path of meditation for bodhisattvas for the first seven bhumis. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're eliminating you're eliminating the afflictions and their seeds. Right. And then on the eighth, ninth, and tenth grounds, you're eliminating the latencies.
Okay. But the process of this great of the great, middle of the great, is both on this stage of the path and also on the later stage of the path for different results.
Yes, because in one, you're suppressing it, and you're there, your object is... You know, you can do it on the four truths. Here, it was describing it in the mundane way that both Buddhists and non-Buddhists can do, meditating of grossness and peacefulness. But you can also do it meditating on the four truths. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can you explain again the difference between these 16 versus the 16 moments, like the Vaibhashika with the goats lining up in the bridge? okay. of the liberating and...
I think, are there, on the Vaivasika, are you referring to when they talk about it in the... I'm not sure.
Like the, when they talk about
a
six.
On a bridge. Sorry.
You know, like they're talking about the elimination of the afflictions one by one, the goat and the bridge, versus in one single moment, all 16 moments.
Yeah.
I'm getting confused with
this
16.
There's different assertions. Some say that these, they break the afflictions. Well, they all say that they break the afflictions into. 16 moments, and let's get to the 16 moments later, okay? But some say you do it one, that there's, what is it, there's nine, there's eight, nine times nine is 81 levels, and you do the 81 levels because you have the afflictions of the desire realm, the afflictions realm, form realm, formless realms, and you eliminate them one by one. And then there's other schools that say you do all the great of all three realms at one time, all the middle great of the three realms at one time, and so on. What are the two?
Getting confused with the different sets of 16. It's in my mind. It's like
this 16.
Like this is 16.
16 what?
Okay, I'm getting confused with the numbers. Sorry.
Yeah. Try and stick with this, and then later, you know, we'll go in. We can. Go into the passing stages, and then it's different. And there, you know, what the Vaibhasikas say and what the Prasangikas say is different, and yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you might just tell me to ask the Buddha, but I'm going to ask you anyway. And the sutra where the Buddha passes away when he reaches Parinirvana, he goes into the fourth form absorption, then enter the four formless absorption, then goes back to into form absorption, like 4-3-2-1, and then goes back 1-2-3-4, and then he passes away. So I've always been wondering, why did he do that?
Why did he do that? Yeah, he must have had some reason. Yeah, again, you can ask him. But they usually say to attain Buddhahood, you have to have actualized all the different absorptions. Everything you have to be able to do yourself, you know. So all six super knowledges, all these different stages. And not just actualize them, you have to be able to go from one to the other, to this one, to a higher one, to a lower one, to a higher one, back and forth very quickly like this. You know, it's some skill that they develop in their meditation. Yeah.
I think you might have already said, but I was wondering, are the afflictions in the great versus the afflictions in the small just a level of subtlety? Or are there different kinds?
No, they're the same afflictions, but the great are more pronounced, and the subtle ones are more subtle.
The first mental contemplation of discernment of characteristics sounds a lot like a meditation on the disadvantages of samsara to generate renunciation. Is it just that it's a more limited, just focused on the desire realm?
Yeah, there you're just focusing on the disadvantages of the desire realm. Yeah. For renunciation, you need disadvantages of all the realms. Yeah. Okay. And also, your motivation is different. Yeah. Whether you're trying to really renounce samsara or you're just trying to get a deeper level of concentration. Yeah. What you're aiming for. Yeah. Your motivation has a strong... The motivation is what you do before you enter the meditation, but it has a strong impact on the result of the meditation. Okay? your motivation and also your worldview. Yeah. Remember I talked about the rabbi who did Zen meditation and concluded that God exists. Yeah, he was working from that viewpoint. Okay. Yeah?
In the first mental contemplation, the hindrances come up again.
The what?
In the first mental contemplation, the hindrances come up again and have to be dealt with, even though they've been dealt with in gaining serenity.
Yeah, because you may have actualized serenity, yeah, when you stop your meditation session and you're going and watering the plants and you're dealing with the contractor and you know, and somebody else, you know, put the spatula in the wrong place, your afflictions come up again. Yeah, so it's not that you immediately, you sit down and like, whammo, bango, you're back into serenity.
But when you look at the 9 points leading to serenity, it yeah. sounds like once you sit down and you're in the eighth and
that's
ninth
what,
stage,
that's
they,
when you're
they
doing,
go right into it.
Yeah, that's when you're doing them all in a row. You're in retreat, okay? You're not dealing with, you know, the orchard. You're not dealing with what your boss told you. You're not taking your kid to the ER. Yeah. So then when you sit down, it's much easier to enter. Yeah. But at other times, you have to, you know, apply the antidotes to calm your mind down again. Okay. Let's call it a night. Yeah. So go over this, you know, read it again a few times, you know, draw some pictures and some charts, you know, for yourself, you know, of what happens when. And you can make it beautiful, use colored pencils, yeah, crayons, you can draw pictures with it. You can do a flow chart.
Finger paint.
Yeah, yeah, finger paint with on the computer. And then we can print it out and have some physical manifestations of it. Yeah. And get attached to the beautiful colors of the desire realm in our charts. Okay.